Welcome back to Too Much Future, the show where we talk about the Fallout games. This episode, we're talking about Fallout 3. Continuing to talk about Fallout 3, I'm Cameron.
I'm Michael.
Michael, I'm tired.
Uh-huh.
It's been a hectic week.
Yeah, a hectic week running through the desolate wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then also playing Fallout.
And I had to climb up a bunch of stairs. Oh, wait, I got to take an elevator to the top of the memorial.
I was getting ready to ask. It's like, wait, no. Is there like a stairs option for this quest that I missed?
What a thrill.
Yeah, no, that's it would be very, very funny. Like, it's all the multi-directional, right? Multifaceted gameplay of Fallout that you love. You can take an elevator or some stairs to the top of the Washington Monument.
You see that monument? You can go there through two different methods. This episode, Michael, we are back to the main quest.
Mm-hmm.
We're back to it. We're looking for our papa.
Mm-hmm. Papa,
where's our papa?
Where art thou, papa?
You want to give a quick summary of where we are in the narrative, real quick?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so we thought we grew up in the vault. Vault 101.
I want to stop you right here really quick. We did grow up in the vault.
No. We thought we did. It turns out we grew up outside of the vault and then started playing Fallout 3. Okay. So we thought we were, a vault dweller born and raised, I should say. Mm. And in the vault was where we spent most of our days, nevertheless. But anyway, our dad was a doctor. And he escaped the vault for kind of unknown reasons and told us not to follow him. Nevertheless, we did. We escaped the vault ourselves because the overseer, the leader of the vault, was going to have us killed, probably. We got out. We went to a nearby settlement called Megaton, and we found out that our father had also gone there after he had gotten out of the vault, and then he had headed off to the place where a radio station called Galaxy News Radio is broadcast. And that's literally as far as we've gotten thus far, other than, like, we also learned that we were born outside of the vault and our father is some sort of not vault person, right? He was allowed into the vault after our birth for reasons and under circumstances that are unclear.
And kind of in the middle of those things happening, right, in the middle of these little story chunks that we just talked about or that you just explained, we've been doing side questy kind of stuff. I've got about, I would say, 11 hours of playtime into the game so far, something like that, 10 or 11. But that just gives, I think, an idea of the difference. The reason I'm pointing that out is to point out just, briefly, because I don't think we've really talked about it yet, the narrative difference between Fallout 1 and Fallout 2. In Fallout 1, Fallout 2, and Fallout 3, mm-hmm. and in 1 and 2, the main quest progression is not really different from side quest progression, in the sense of, like, I was doing every quest I could in order to figure out where the hell I was supposed to be going next. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a sum total experience, right? Like, you go to a town, and you talk to everyone you can talk to figure out where exactly, how this fits in, and then where you're supposed to be going.
Mm-hmm.
In this, it's like we have goalposts that are in the quote unquote main quest, right? And I can't remember what the main quest is called.
Right now, it's called like Following in His Footsteps or something. It changes names. Footsteps.
Yeah. So that main quest, right? It's like we get to it, and then it like kicks another pin off somewhere else in the map, and then you've got a little bit of time to kind of wander around and see what's going on, and do the quests we've done in Megaton and elsewhere. So it is interesting that Fallout 3, and obviously this is either a concession or a opportunity, depending on how you feel about it, right? But the difference here is that Fallout 3 is really maintaining clear parameters when it comes to, like, where you need to be going next if you were doing the mainline quest.
Mm-hmm.
Does that improve or hurt the game or have no impact on you, Michael?
I was actually thinking about this probably when I was doing the stuff we were playing through for the last video. I am not sure. It does make like, by comparison, it does make a place like Megaton feel a little slim compared to even something like Klamath from the beginning of Fallout 2, if only because the way, and this also just might have to do with, like, the types of quests that they were, but I felt like, you know, things that I was doing in Klamath, for instance, were putting me in contact with a couple of different people in the town, and sort of the quests were maybe about the tensions or relationships between those people. Whereas, you know, Megaton has some quests associated with it, but those quests are all kind of quests that are meant to hook you into other locations in the map. And in the end, it means that Megaton itself, I mean, it is a hub, and it ends up feeling like a hub, right? Rather than a place that exists in kind of this more concrete way than I think other locations in the previous game did. I don't know if you would agree or not, but that's kind of my sense of it.
Yeah, I do. I think that there's something, and I think this happens across every post-Morrowind Bethesda game, because I don't think Morrowind is this way. But you know, certainly because I played Skyrim in the past year, right, I streamed playing through Skyrim. Something that's interesting about, you know, Fallout 3 through Skyrim and I up through Fallout 4, I think, and even 76 to some degree, although that it's a little bit different in what I'm about to say. These games feel like worlds without societies.
Yes.
They feel like worlds that are populated by individuals and not worlds that are populated by groups of people. And actually, I think when you run into groups of people or things that feel like groups of people, the world feels a little bit deeper. So, for example, when you walk by the Children of the Atom in the bottom of Megaton, those feel like people who live in the world, mm-hmm. right? And it's because they have two scripts that they go through over and over again. So, like, of course, mm-hmm. you know. But, you know, they have a relationship to the city in a particular kind of way. They're a group of people who all kind of act the same and talk about one another. Other people talk about them. Mm-hmm. And that's just not, I mean, like you're saying, right? Really, for the most part, the people who live in Megaton, they don't have much to say to you about Megaton. And also, I think something that contributes to this is that the Bethesda game doesn't require you to walk through very much information before you get the goods, as mm-hmm. it were. So it's almost always very apparent what you need to click on in a dialogue, you know, box that will move the plot along, mm-hmm. as opposed to having to just talk through a bunch of weird stuff about, like, opinions and where someone is located and where they're from and, like, what's going on in town that you had to do in Fallout 1 and 2 in order to get to questy kind of content. So there's something about, I think I want to be careful. You can hear my hesitation. I want to be careful because I don't want to say that this is all like, oh, they had to make Fallout accessible. Mm-hmm. You know, they had to make Fallout accessible to the console audience and it ruined Fallout. I don't think that's what's going on. But I do think what's going on is that Bethesda is pretty good at making you feel like you're not wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all decisions that are implemented for expediency. You can play the game in 10 or 15 minute chunks and make actual progress. You cannot play Fallout 1 and Fallout 2 in 10 or 15 minute chunks and make progress.
Precisely. Absolutely true.
So you know, I think that I just want to take a minute here at the top to talk about those kind of design decisions that I think are interesting. I want to talk, too, we haven't really taken much time out for it yet, but sometime during this episode, I want to talk about the, like, mini games for hacking and lockpicking.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because I think those are interesting, you know, compared to what we have previously, but we're looking for our papa. Michael, how did you go and find Papa Neeson?
So I fast traveled into the city because I had already been there. That makes a big difference in terms of how you feel. Like, again, right, like, am I wasting my time? I should actually back up a little bit and just say, because last time I had such a horrible, horrible ordeal, I spent some time in between play sessions grinding, essentially, trying to stock up on ammo, because one of the problems I had last time is we were fighting a lot of enemies that weren't drop. They didn't use guns, so they weren't dropping ammo. So I was running out of ammo, and I have a gun-based character, and that is a huge problem. And then also I'd bought out all of the merchants because we don't have many merchants yet. So I was just like grinding and stockpiling ammo. There was like a little like school of an old elementary school near Megaton where there are some raiders camped out and they respawn every couple days. Also, I was going into the city because there are super mutants there and they use guns. So if I was, you know, careful, I could get ammo there. And eventually I leveled up. I'm at like level 9 at the start of this play session and I get to level 10 by the end. And at some point, I think at level 9, I took a perk called Scrounger that means that I will find more ammo, like in general, when I'm checking things for loot, when I'm checking containers and so on. So all of this is just to say, like, in kind of a Bethesda game fashion, right? I have found a way to make this game playable in very small chunks, like you were talking about. Like, I can pop in for 15 minutes and see if those raiders have respawned and if I can get more ammo and things like that. So I'm fitted out. Eleanor is fitted out. And I go back into the city and sort of pretty quickly I find Sarah Lyons, or I guess Sentinel Lyons, as she is named in text, who is part of the Brotherhood of Steel. And there's a couple of other Brotherhood of Steel guys in power armor standing around, and they're getting ready to make a run on Galaxy News Radio, because we already know from Megaton that Galaxy News Radio is not broadcasting as well as they did. There's some sort of technical problem, and they can't broadcast out over the wasteland. So you run in, like, you're trying to get to the GNR Plaza, and this is when you run into the Brotherhood of Steel, because they are coming in to protect GNR from a rush of super mutants, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the super mutants are trying to take Galaxy News Radio for ... reasons.
Yeah, and that's going to be a recurring question of mine throughout this video, is exactly what is the function of, or I mean, I know what the function of super mutants is in kind of a game sense, right? They're orcs. That's what they are.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? If raiders are goblins, then super mutants are orcs. But yeah, I guess like super mutants just live in DC and kill people and take things over, whatever.
Yeah, they just hang out and like do and carry AK-47s. I wrote down some of the quotes that come from Sarah Lyons and her like buddies that are in it's called like the Lyons Pride or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So one of she says the entire city is crawling with super mutants. Where did they come from? You know, you and I have a long, like, logic of super mutants, right? They come from the Master.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he made them. We know that the super mutants at the end of Fallout 1 migrated away. We do know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess to hear, but there weren't that many. Anyway, whatever. Maybe we'll find out more about that later in the game. But one of the other things that one of her, like, buddies says is 5 mutants released from their torment.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, killed all these super mutants. And so I don't know if that's just, like, a bark, you know, this character has, whatever, that's part of the scripted event. I don't know if there's, like, an ideology of the Brotherhood of Steel that, like, super mutants are, like, you know, cursed human beings, basically, you know. And I guess, theoretically, that's true, right, in the sense that, like, these are people who are dipped against their will and probably have some kind of consciousness. I don't think I have a good sense of like what's going on with the super mutant phenomenologically, so I'm gonna kind of be paying attention to that through here too, if there's a slight rewriting of the Brotherhood of Steel super mutant relationship as one that's a little bit more like we have a duty to get rid of the super mutant for their own good.
Yeah, and it's a sort of turn away from the Brotherhood of Steel that we saw in Fallout 2, which was very, very minimal. They had almost no presence in that game. They kind of just showed up. They had little outposts in a couple of towns, and they were watching you mysteriously. And in fact, it was sort of established in that game that the Brotherhood of Steel had kind of declined in power relative to the Enclave, who were coming in. But now we have, like, the Brotherhood of Steel is just, they're a paramilitary, military force. I don't know if you can be paramilitary when, like, there's not a, like, other, there's not, like, something else they can be para to. They just are what they are.
Yeah. Oh, and two, I mean, something that's interesting, here about, I think, just the way that Sarah Lyons talks and the way that all these people talk is that they are now, and I think this is an effect of Bethesda, they're less an organization that would be doing surveillance. They're less an organization that would be, like, accruing an army, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
They're a fantasy faction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're paladins.
Yes.
Right? They are armored knights that are running through the wasteland, vanquishing enemies. They're, you know, obviously they're not using that language or anything like that, but just the kind of tone of it, you know, in Fallout 2, like you're saying, the predominant contact we have with the Brotherhood of Steel is someone walking up and basically being like, hey, buddy, we've been watching you, blah, 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 blah. And, like, we cannot imagine that in a Bethesda Fallout game, right? That's just not how they work.
Right. And
so,
and also, like, I think it's worth thinking about, I don't know what it means that the Brotherhood of Steel, who I don't recall having much of an opinion on, like, mutants to begin with, being very anti-mutant now. It's an interesting turn because it essentially, it makes the Brotherhood of Steel sound a lot more like the Enclave. Because, like, that mm-hmm. was the thing that the Enclave had a huge problem with, was, like, purity, right? So that whole thing about, you know, like, the super mutants released from their torment or whatever, like, sounds like the sort of thing an Enclave soldier might say. And it's weird, right? It puts you on a different foot with this faction because they have been kind of streamlined into a fantasy paladin faction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess we'll see where all of this goes. You know, there's some interesting differences, I think, that we're already detecting here, but we're going to get a whole lot more Brotherhood of Steel without mm-hmm. getting into any kind of spoilers. If you never played the game before, this is not the only encounter we're going to have with these people. And we get to Galaxy News Radio.
Yeah, you get a big set piece battle. You go through some buildings and kill some super mutants, and some Brotherhood of Steel people die, and you can take their power armor, but you can't wear it because you haven't been trained.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get sort of like funneled into this plaza right outside of the Galaxy News Radio building, and then you get to fight a super mutant behemoth, which is like what if a super mutant, but maybe twice or three times as big?
Yeah, you can't kill this thing with a melee weapon, just letting you know, in case you're thinking of trying that out. Kind of one-shots you and all of the Brotherhood of Steel. I wish you could get its weapon, though. Its weapon is rad. It's some of the best design I've seen in a Fallout game. It is if you've ever seen a fire hydrant being installed, right? A fire hydrant's a little red thing on top, but then it's like probably, depending on where it's being installed, of course, you know, 4, 6, 8 feet of vertical pipe directly underneath it, right? That goes down into the water pipes beneath the street or beneath, depending on where you are, right? Beside the street. And so the Super Mutant Behemoth, its weapon is a melee weapon, and it's the fire hydrant, but the full 8 feet or whatever of mm-hmm. fire hydrant pull. And so it's using it as a mace. Which is, again, super cool, but also, as you were saying, it's orc shit, right?
Right.
Like, this is 100%, that kind of thing.
Right, and he's got, like, a shopping trolley on his back that he is apparently, like, using as a backpack. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not see that, but that makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
If I could do that, I would.
Yeah, you know, it's a really cool design. I think, how did you take it out, then?
Well, I had to pick up an old, it's called a Fat Man. It's a Ooh. Weapon that is, I think, is that new?
Yes.
It must be new to Fallout 3.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a mini nuclear warhead launcher.
Mm-hmm.
Which maybe accounts for the kind of retroactive, backward-looking thing that we've been talking about this whole time of the difference between the way that Fallout 1 and 2 treat things like nuclear weapons and nuclear war and Fallout 3 treats it, this might be one of the places that that's coming from. Because literally, you can launch little mini nuclear warheads at people, and 20 feet away from you, they generate a little mushroom cloud.
Mm-hmm. It's just so dang cute.
Mm-hmm. Little cute guy.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, kind of... you can see a direct line from this to, you know, E3 presentation of Fallout 76, where it's like, and we've got the nukes launching the nuclear warheads on your best friends. You know what I mean? Like, you can see how we got there, I think. Which admittedly, I think in Fallout 1 and 2, you wouldn't see anything like that. But as we've pointed out, and as you've pointed out, you know, very clearly, Michael, it's because they don't have anything to say about nuclear war.
Yeah, no, the nukes are just total pretext in those games.
Mm-hmm. How did you do it? Did you just shoot him a bunch?
Yeah, I shot him a bunch, and then I saw how effortlessly he was taking out the Brotherhood of Steel, and Eleanor was like, okay, this is bad. So I, you know, opened up my Pip-Boy, and I took a whole bunch of drugs. And then just shot him a whole bunch, and then he died.
Just like a thousand little things of Jet.
Yeah, I took like Jet, like Psycho, one that like gives you a damage buffer,
Buff out maybe.
Yeah. Actually, I think that one's Med-X that gives you like damage resistance or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Eleanor just like. Popped a whole bunch of pills and then just shot this thing in the head.
You can just loot. There's a dead Brotherhood of Steel person who's like on that fountain in the plaza, and you can loot their body, and they got the fat man and like, gosh, 10 or 8 shells for it.
Wow.
And you can just spam him with it if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So we do that, and then we get to talk to our favorite guy.
Three dog.
Oh! Three dog. Have you been listening to Three Dog on the radio?
No, I haven't. The signal doesn't come in. I just haven't had it turned on. This was the first episode where I was like, I'm going to listen to Three Dog and see what he's up to.
What do you think about Three Dog? Three Dog is a famous. He's obviously the radio DJ for Galaxy News Radio, and he, I would say, is in the legacy of Fallout 3, something or a character that people really remember and kind of like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about Three Dog?
He's fine. I mean, he's kind of a, and I might have mentioned this in a previous video. Even I think he's sort of clearly modeled off of the DJ Wolfman Jack.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of
yeah,
his for sure. His persona and presentation is very similar, and I like Wolfman Jack. That's fine. I think it's a cool idea. I'll say like up top, I like the radio in this game in general. Right, I think that it adds a lot of texture and sort of it gives the game a good way to. Like, respond to your choices, right? Because Three Dog will talk about things that you have done out in the world, and so on and so forth. But also, he's kind of, like, in practice, sort of repetitive, and as a character, strangely thin.
Yeah.
Which I guess is not bad, but, like, still, it's just like, yeah, okay. Like, he's a radio DJ, and he's kind of Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that unfortunately, that's kind of the deal with Fallout 3 NPCs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't think that many of them have very much depth to them, but I think in some cases that really works out well. So like Lucas Sims being the sheriff, right? And he's just a sheriff. He's a Western sheriff who lives in Megaton. Like that works, right? That kind of two dimensionality. And I guess being Wolfman Jack is like your second dimension is perfectly fine too. But, I think this has to do with like not having to walk through very much information in your conversations. Cause you can click on an option to be like, so Three Dog, what's your deal?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do that. Did you do that?
I did. And, like, basically he's like, oh, yeah, like, well, okay, so you can ask about his parents or something. Like, basically, so the other thing about Three Dog, in addition to being Wolfman Jack, is that he's, like, he sees himself as, like, running a liberatory radio station.
Yes.
Like, he's, yeah. like, radio-free wasteland, basically, right? And he really hates the Enclave. He also hates mutants. And he seems to suggest at multiple points that, like, the Enclave and mutants work together somehow, but not in a way that becomes clear, right? It's like he talks about how if he weren't here broadcasting the truth, which is a truth that the Brotherhood of Steel agrees with, then, like, I guess, like, the truth basically is that he is anti-Enclave. He says, you know, like, on the one hand, the Enclave isn't here, because he talks about how the Enclave station is all just propaganda, trying to make people sort of, like, passive and, like, make them wait for the Enclave to come in and clean things up. But the alternative, I guess, is to just have, like, mutants everywhere and taking over. So he broadcasts, like, anti-Enclave programming in order to get people to support the Brotherhood of Steel. And you can ask him, you know, like, what's your deal? How did you come to all of these opinions? And you can phrase it as something like, you know, what were your parents like? And he says, oh, I wasn't born. I fell from space.
What's his name?
The Fury?
Space. The Orchestra. So he's like Sun Ra.
Yeah, exactly. So he says, like, well, you know, I wasn't born. I fell from space. And then he pauses and he's like, I'm just messing with you. My parents, and basically he was just like, my parents, like, thought the Enclave was bullshit too. And I, like, grew up and they taught me to think for myself. And so I also decided the Enclave was bullshit. And now I fight the good fight, which is what he calls his broadcasting of Across the Wasteland.
I grew up to believe my parents.
Yeah, kind of, right? And this is also, I guess, an example of the relative lack of depth between what the kind of character writing you're going to get here versus the past two games, where in kind of an older, frankly, school of RPG design, characters are going to have these backstories that are bound up in the cruft of the world in a way that... like, for Three Dog, it's all kind of, like, his backstory is, he is a product of this world, but in such a general way that, like, it almost felt bizarre to have this as a dialogue option. Just be like, yeah, like, I grew up, and, like, how did you come to believe this? I grew up, and I believed it.
And I want to make sure that people don't accuse us of having rose-colored glasses. Because I am not forgetting the fact that we were introduced to two NPCs in Fallout 2, one of which was the villain from Big Trouble in Little China, and the other of which was Bruce Lee. So I'm not saying that all characters in those previous games were that way, but some characters, more characters, I think, than what we've encountered so far, have that kind of relationship to the world.
Right. Well, I think of someone like Myron, who is maybe kind of an exception because he is a party member, but also, like, there's just, like, so much bullshit you can talk with Myron about, and you, like, just get so much information from him about all of this stuff that is very particular to his experiences being a person in the Wasteland. Whereas for Three Dog, it is just, yeah, I'm a person in the Wasteland, and I decided to use my radio for good.
Yeah, or even, you know, I'm thinking too about, like, the new Reno families in general. You can talk to them about a lot of different things and kind of really kind of go for it to get the full history of new Reno. So no, I 100%, I think that as a general principle, for sure. I don't want that comment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I don't want that YouTube comment.
Mm-hmm.
It says, hey, but what about? Don't do it. If you were going to do that comment, don't do it. But Three Dog's a little bit of a scamp, I would say.
He is a scamp.
He is. He says, I'm fighting a good fight, and yeah, I know where your papa is.
Mm-hmm.
I know where Papa Neeson is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to tell you until you do something for me.
And that thing is, pass a speech check.
So you didn't have to do this quest at all?
So here's where this gets very interesting. I could have passed this quest if I wanted to, because I did. I have a, so he's like, you know, I'll tell you where your dad is, but you have to join the good fight, right? You have to do something for me and I'll do something for you. Mm-hmm. And then I get a speech option that's like, well, you know, my dad's a scientist, and if I could find him, I bet he could really help the good fight. And so I choose that, I pass it, and I get Three Dog, I get the option for Three Dog to just tell me straight up, like, where my dad is and completely bypass this quest. Now, second to that, I then have the option to be like, you know what, I've done some thinking and I would like to help you. So I went ahead and did that so I would have content for this episode. Or more content, I suppose. But it is interesting that there's the dialogue option that allows you to just jump over this quest, but then the dialogue tree is written such that you can do that and then just turn around and do the quest anyway, right? The dialogue check becomes just kind of a source of additional experience points, because I can't think of... So if this were an older Fallout game, right, you would have done that speech check and it would have just ended the quest, right? You would have gotten to the end of the quest. You would have, like, literally just jumped through that hoop. And, like, the fact that you can do both here is very interesting to me, because it suggests that the passing the speech check is kind of its own little reward, its own little accomplishment. But the way that Bethesda is imagining the player is not the player who is going to be like, you know, I went through and I passed every single speech check and that was just how I played the game. They are also imagining the player who is doing that and then doing the quest anyway for the additional experience, for whatever loot you get along the way and so on.
Yeah, there's something interesting, I guess, that's happening around, like, I think what we will eventually call something like player freedom. And I'm sure that's kind of language that's in the mix, but I think that is a value of design really gets valorized around this time period. And now you have the freedom to, like, do it or not do it and have all the options laid out in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas even the beneficial, quote unquote, cutting off of the possibility of the quest in a previous game, I think that is experienced by players sometimes. I don't know if this is always the case, but that can be experienced by players as a limiting of options,
mm-hmm.
Even though it is a positive limiting of options. And it's really interesting, I guess, that, like, it doesn't require you to make a choice. You know, fundamentally, this is a forking path where you can back up down the path and go some other way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess that, you know, that's another thing I associate Bethesda games with a lot, is this kind of unwillingness to commit to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that, you know, that sounds really negative, and I don't really mean it that much of a negative, because obviously people really do respond to those things in really positive and interesting ways. But for example, and I'm not trying to bring up Skyrim all the time, but I think it just, you know, it's in my mind. For example, making choices about, you know, the Imperials versus the Rebels, or making choices about, like, which factions to back and things like that. None of that really matters. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't really change the world state in any significant way. You can always kind of back up and do something different if you want to. There is never a point, or there are rarely points in which you cannot reverse or just go down a different pathway that you did not choose at one point. And so it's just a purposeful unwillingness to commit to anything, and in doing so, giving people just more options of things to do. And obviously people enjoy that,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think their games are popular for that reason, but it does kind of, like, it makes a lot of decisions feel very kind of toothless, because it's like, well, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who cares if I... They don't have a lot of weight. I think that's actually, and again, I don't want to spoil anything, but I think that is why the end of this game, before the ending was changed in DLC, why it was partially so kind of controversial. But we'll get to that at some point. So, the last episode, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I specifically said, let's not talk about something. Now I'm going to bring it to you, because previously, you know, earlier in this episode, you said, I just kind of skipped right to the area because you'd explored DC before. But now what we have to do is we have to go get a satellite dish. and we've got to go put it on the Washington Monument to make the radio good again. And we're going to have to go through some tunnels. And Michael, you don't have a good time in tunnels.
No.
Tell me about the experience of being in tunnels in the Capitol wasteland, in the Capitol itself.
So I've been trying to sort of think through, and like you, I have recently played a lot of Skyrim, and that kind of comes up for me again in playing this, as I think through, like, what is it in Skyrim that is different here? Like, what is it that feels sort of streamlined later on, right? Like, what are the things that Bethesda is discovering in this game that they work to circumvent? And I feel like, in general, one of the things that happens here in Fallout 3 is Bethesda does not know how to design an urban space. Or rather, they do, but maybe too well. They know how to design an urban space. They don't know how to design a game space. Because everything is just so samey. Like, there are all of these metro... So there are... The idea behind DC downtown, if you're listening to this and have never played Fallout 3, is that there are various parts of the city that you can't just walk from one to the other because, like, buildings have collapsed, the roads are out, so on and so forth. So to get to various parts of the city, you have to go down into the old subway tunnels and go here, there, everywhere, because all the subway tunnels kind of connect in their own sort of, underground system. So you go down into these subway tunnels and then you come out in a different part of the city. This sort of makes sense, I think, if you're imagining, like, what does an urban space look like 200 years after a nuclear war? Like, that's, I sort of see the logic behind it. But the fact of the matter is, all of the spaces are made with the same, like, assets, and there's never any clear way to know, like, well, there is a clear way, but it's a very unclear presentation at first. It's a presentation you have to learn. So you go down into a subway tunnel, and you have your quest objective marked somewhere, and you'll go down into the subway tunnel, and then there's just, like, all of these dotted lines, like, bouncing around, showing that you have to go to from this station to this station to this station to this station. But it doesn't immediately map to, like, anything you can see or intuit about the subway tunnels themselves. It just looks like it looks absurd, right? The idea of, like, I'm trying to find my way through this city, and then I walk into this underground subway tunnel, and the route that is written for me is just all of these lines bouncing around. It's like, oh, okay, so, like, to get to this station, I have to go to this station to go to this station to go to this station. And you have to sort of switch between, in the end, right, how this works is you're supposed to kind of switch between the world map and your local map to get a sense of, like, where the next door you're supposed to walk through is.
Yeah, because you're having to use, like, service tunnels and, like, hatches and things like that, too. It's not like, because, as you're saying, like, there are a lot of routes that are blocked, but also it's like, the route underneath the route that you're looking for is also blocked. And so, you know, it's kind of like multiple layers of navigation as well.
And to some extent, this is troubling for me because it is contrary to my impulse when I'm playing Bethesda games, which is like, you know, when I play Morrowind, I'm the guy who immediately, as soon as I can, I have got constant levitation on myself and I just fly everywhere. in Skyrim, I jump over mountains and things like that, right? I just, like, that is how I play these games, is there's usually, like, a path in world that you're supposed to take, and I'm the person who's going to, like, scale the mountain in the opposite direction and then fall over into my objective. Like, that's just how I interface with these spaces. But Fallout 3, by sort of just the very nature of its design, you have to use these subway tunnels. And as I said, they're all samey. It's very easy to get turned around in them. And it feels like, as I said, it feels accurate to these spaces, but it weirdly does not feel like a game space.
Yeah, I think it pulls a little bit of a bait and switch with you because As I said, like in last episode, I have like a sixth sense for doing this. So in some ways, I'm just not a good example.
Mm-hmm.
But also I found myself this time because I got turned around at one point because I wasn't looking at the quest markers or anything. I got turned around and I ended up like in a previous station that I'd been in already. And so on one hand, I was like, oh, that's cool. You can actually just underground without coming back up, navigate through several of these, which is cool. But I ended up not looking at, because in this episode, we're trying to go basically two stations down, like in it's like a north-south line. And we're trying to go two stations down, and one of them is the Museum of Technology, where this satellite dish is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we didn't establish that. Like, the problem mm-hmm. 3Doc has, the reason the signal hasn't been coming in is that some super mutants shot his satellite dish, his transponder or whatever, off the top of the Washington Monument, and he would like us to go pick up a new one.
Yeah, and it's on, like, a lunar lander, basically, mm-hmm. Or a space lander, or what do you call it? A module that flies through space. I don't know what that's called. An exploration pod. But anyway, so we're trying to go to this Museum of Technology, and so it's clearly marked. It's got its own subway station. And so I actually ended up just looking at the in-game signage a lot, which and it actually worked. So I was like, I looked at the subway map, and I was like, okay, I gotta go two stations down from this. And then I just like followed the in-game like map stuff where it was like red line south, and that's where because it was there's a red line, a white line, and something else, maybe blue, and that worked surprisingly enough. So I navigated my way on down there. There's some raiders down here,
mm-hmm.
But there are also ghouls. Are you good for fighting ghouls now since you have enough ammo?
No, ghouls are fine. Like, I can take care of them, no problem. The other thing that I ran into, and this is another problem of how Michael plays Bethesda games, but it's also, I guess, exacerbated by certain elements of this design. I ended up like wandering into like a sewer as I was I was trying to figure out which station I needed to go into and then how I got to the next one. But one of the other problems here is that if you start taking a different direction, the route on your Pip-Boy will then sort of adjust to account for where you are. And yeah. It will start looking like, there is no like one good option. There can be multiple ways to get to the objective, but this also means, like, I don't know if, like, there's a way that the game would rather I go that's, like, more appropriate to my, like, level and place where I am in the game. So I ended up in, like, this sewer that was filled with mercenaries called Talon mercenaries, who I vaguely remember from having played this previously. I think maybe they're slavers or something. Anyway, they are stronger than me, and they use a bunch of energy weapons, and they're also, like, down here in this sewer fighting with, like, super mutants, and I go down there, and I'm thinking maybe this is, like, the direction I'm supposed to be going, because, again, I've, like, checked my map, and it's, like, rerouted me, and I fight through a bunch of these guys, and I get some experience, because I'm, like, they are, like, considerably tougher than even like basic super mutants, which I can take out basic super mutants pretty easily now. And then I end up in this hospital that's like filled with more super mutants, and there are some like centaurs in there or something. And I was like, okay, this feels not right. I'm just going to leave. So I back out and try to pursue the main quest. But also, again, how Michael plays Bethesda games is I'm the sort of person who will also just like, oh, I found a thing. I'm just going to do that. But I didn't want to take time out of what we were going to be talking about to do this like hospital that I found, which may end up being a part of another quest that we may cover. So
I also got kind of drugged toward the hospital, and I knew enough to be like, I'm not supposed to be going to a hospital here. I remembered enough, so I didn't do that. But and it's also near, if you're above ground near the hospital, it's also near, it's called like, this is not the right name, but it's something like Mistress Featherbottom's Dainty Garment Shop.
Yes, I did find this too.
And I was like, I wonder if that might be a quest later too. So, but yeah, that's all in the wrong direction. I had an easier time with the tunnels this time, or as far as enemies are concerned, because when I helped the ghouls at Tenpenny Tower, I got a thing called a ghoul mask. I can plop that bad boy on my head, and ghouls do not aggro me.
Nice.
It is very nice. It's especially nice when there are ghouls that are near mercenaries, and you can make them see one another. And so you don't have to fight them. So I, you know, even the parts that had like feral ghoul roamers and like all that kind of stuff, that the higher level ghouls, I was able to scooch by them and then get to the Museum of Technology. Let's talk about Museum of Technology first and then talk about the mall. Anything interesting to you in the Museum of Technology other than that you just got to walk through it? I mean, it's a dungeon. Mm-hmm. There are some super mutants here. You got to hit them with a pool cue a bunch of times.
Yeah.
They don't like it.
I like the Museum of Technology as a setting. So this is a thing that I like about Fallout 3 in general, is I think they... In Fallout 1 and 2, the old world was, in many ways, gone. And the parts of it that were still there, like the Boneyard, which used to be Los Angeles, right, were changed in such a way that they were not the things that they used to be. And even like, you know, the idea behind New Reno in Fallout 2 was that the New Reno survives as well as it does, right? It still has the famous New Reno sign, but the Reno sign, is because like Reno in and of itself was not important enough to be like bombed. Mm-hmm. So the way that the transition to DC happens means that Bethesda gets to capitalize on a lot of things, like, oh, there's a national mall and there are all these museums with all this history, and you can get like Fallout world lore. But all in all, I didn't find the Museum of the Museum of Technology.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find anything like deeply impressive here in terms of lore. It was just kind of interesting, right? You go through, I got a couple of stealth boys. They're just
I got those as well.
Yeah, there's some like stealth boys on display and you can get those. You get a stronger sense for kind of how nuclear obsessed the world was before the war happened. Like in kind of an everyday way, right? There's a, you can look at some terminals that have intercompany memos on them, and people are complaining about I think it's like a display of weapons or something.
I did not see this one.
Yeah, right.
I really like the memos that are in the Museum of Technology, though.
Yeah, what was your favorite one?
One is about, so it's like there's an IMAX theater equivalent, mm-hmm. that is in the museum, and it's too loud. Mm-hmm. It's so loud that it's damaging people's hearing, mm-hmm. and the people who work there have to wear ear protection.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are taking it from 140 decibels to 130 decibels.
Mm-hmm.
What I love about that is it is 100% someone who at you know, working at Bethesda, who is like, The damn IMAX is too loud. The IMAXs are just too loud. These, you know, whatever, you know, any educational facility that you go to past 1990 has built an IMAX theater into it, right? And mm-hmm. so that's 100% just the vibe. So I thought that was great.
Yeah, and in general, there's a couple of things like that where people are, like, talking about displays or things of that nature, and... it's a little more zany than mm-hmm. like how the game looks, right? Which is very drab and brown. You get the sense that it's very much part of that, like that sense of before the war, the retro future like world of Fallout was very, very stupid.
Yeah, which is also funny too, right? That the kind of Fallout satire or whatever, right? The Fallout 3 positions the world before the bombs dropped as a Mad Magazine cartoon.
Yes, exactly.
Like it's the same kind of like, let's make a joke and, or, you know, let's make five jokes. Two of those will be kind of funny jokes. Three of those will be just the dumbest jokes you've ever heard in your life. But they're coherent with one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is very much a Mad Magazine kind of parody of the 1950s. And there are little touches of that, even in the environmental design that I like here. There's one pathway right beside the stealth boys where you can go into the quote unquote Hall of Today, mm-hmm. and it's just completely demolished.
Yeah.
You cannot go into the Hall of Today, mm-hmm. which is just a funny note, that the Hall of Today sucks. It's exploded. It's bad now.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, I was just walking through this and killing super mutants and then looking for a satellite dish.
Yeah. So like you find there's like a space rocket that you can find, and you can mm-hmm. read some lore on that and find out that by the end of Fallout's world, they were using their former like NASA rockets to launch nukes.
Great.
Right. So that's like the state of the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I don't know. You fight some super mutants. You get into a room. There's the lander. You grab the thing and it's kind of done.
Mm-hmm. There's a planetarium that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I wish they did more with the planetarium. You find out early on through one of the terminals that the planetarium is like glitched and it keeps restarting, and you only get like 10 seconds of the planetarium. I was hoping for a sort of like more solid land to that joke, because you walk into the planetarium and it's like, oh yeah, no, it just restarts every 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for like cool giving us the world there that they kind of leave on the table. But yeah, then you just leave, and then you're on the National Mall, and mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the National Mall, there's the Washington Monument, and you know, this is, you can tell when they were designing and thinking, where do we set Fallout 3? This is so easy, right? You're like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, you get a big kind of like huge messed up Washington Monument, you get the mall, it's a battleground of things happening. And I remember playing this game for the first time, you know, this being like a harrowing kind of experience of like probably being way under leveled and there being super mutants everywhere and mm-hmm. not knowing like how much health I had and things like that. Also playing it on an Xbox 360 that I purchased on eBay for like way less than Xbox 360 goes for, that occasionally when I would look into the distance, it would just project like the star field from 2001 into my face, because like the graphics card was breaking down, or the graphics processor was breaking down, and so I just couldn't look at the horizon at any point. So that really impacted my way of playing Fallout 3 the first time, but it's still pretty cool this time, I think. I mean, you got to make a long run for it, and there's super mutants everywhere, and I didn't make the choice to fight. I ran, because I didn't really see what the point of like, you know, using a bunch of resources on this was when I knew where I was going. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, did you have a similar experience in the mall or?
Yeah. And I actually, like, even back when I first played this game, I had a similar experience of the mall to you, except I didn't have the dying Xbox. But it was similarly, like, I remember my first time stumbling into the mall and being very confused and sort of frightened, because there are all of these super mutants around. It's like, what the heck is this? And it's like, it's a huge open area in the city, which is primarily defined by lots of cover and things being sort of obscured, right? So suddenly you're just in this like huge field. And this time Eleanor, she pops out, and because she's good at sneaking, I just like crouch down and I run around the perimeter of the mall to the Washington Monument gate.
And there's Brotherhood of Steel people there.
Mm-hmm. They.
So you kind of. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, that's one of their outposts.
Convenient.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you kind of just pop that thing open and you take an elevator up to the top or the stairs if you want. And then you slap that thing right on there. There's like a little dialogue box you get.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fixed it.
Yep.
You did it.
Yeah. And then you get to go back down to the bottom of the Washington Monument if you like, and you can go back and talk to Three Dog, but
you don't even have to. You could fast travel from the top of the Washington Monument,
just zip off.
Mm-hmm. So I zipped off, and it's really funny when you talk to Three Dog. He's like, "Hey, if you go out the back door of this thing of the Galaxy News Radio, there's no way back, because it kind of lets you off like high up, and you're going down into a crater, so you can't really crawl back up." In this Bethesda game. And so he's like, you're going to have to find your way back. I don't know how you're going to do it. And obviously I did it by fast traveling.
Yeah.
Galaxy News Radio. Easy peasy. And then he tells you, after not very much conversation, that your papa Neeson is in Rivet City.
Mm-hmm. It's a beached aircraft carrier that a whole bunch of people started a town in, which, according to Three Dog, is, quote, pretty cool, huh?
I mean, yeah, it is pretty cool.
And so, yeah, Papa is off. He's looking for someone named Dr. Lee. That's our the second like bit of the lead.
I don't know if I got that from him. I don't know. I don't know if I kept talking to Three Dog enough to get that information. But yeah, so that, I guess we'll probably wander over to Rivet City next episode. I don't know. We'll find out what we're doing. We might do some side quests next episode. I'll have to look at the side quests that are available to us right now and see what's going on. But yeah, I think this is a cool quest in a general sense. Mm-hmm. I think it takes you above and below. It takes you to several different locations. It gives you some fast travel points. So I think that if you're just exploring this game on your own, really give you opportunities for a lot of different other places.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it provides you like lore. One thing we didn't mention in the Museum of Technology is that there's an entire vault tech exhibit that runs through the vaults and kind of like how the vaults were sold to the public.
Yeah, which is basically like, you will experience the same or better quality of life that you have right now in the vaults.
Mm-hmm.
And we know for a fact, like, so they're selling like all this technology, right? So like one of the, you can click on these little like speakers, right? And they give you information. So one that I clicked on says like, you know, mom will be able to use the muffin maker 5,000 in order to make delicious muffins for everyone in the family. And like, there's not a muffin maker 5,000 down there in Vault 101.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they're like, we're all fighting over the same Pip-Boy.
Right. And it like talks about how the light system is like it's like artificial like sunlight with only a mild percentage of a chance of sunburn. Right. Like it's that sort of again. Right. The idea that before the bombs dropped, the world was a Mad Magazine cartoon.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so it's an interesting thing, and it kind of, the museum funnels you through it on purpose, so you really have to mm-hmm. experience it. But yeah, other than that, I think that's everything that happened in this episode. Yeah, that's all I got. Oh, we didn't talk about the minigames, so we'll talk about that next time. That's okay.
Yeah.
Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at WarrenIsDead.
If you enjoy the show, you can go to patreon.com/rangetouch in order to support it. There's a link down in the description below. At $3 a month, you can get access to the podcast feed of the show, which is great if you just want to listen to it on your favorite podcast system rather than watching the video. You'll be missing out. You'll no longer be a listener. Mm-hmm. You'll just merely be a listener, but that's okay. At $5 a month, you can support us and get all kinds of extra goodies, a couple extra shows a month, including the bonus episodes of our Just King Things podcast, where we talk about weird Stephen King stuff. You can check out our other shows that you might enjoy, such as Just King Things, where we're reading through Stephen King in publication order. By the time that you're hearing this, there will be two episodes out, the first one on Carrie and the second one on Salem's Lot. Both of those episodes are great. And I bet you'll like them a lot. If you enjoy the show, I promise you, you'll like that show. You don't have to like Stephen King or even know anything about Stephen King to like it, in the same way that you don't have to know anything about Fallout to enjoy the show. Probably. I don't know. Yeah. You can also check out Game Study Study Buddies, where we read game studies books and talk to you about them. They're exciting and they're fun. And we've got a lot of those episodes you can check out. Michael, is there anything I'm forgetting here?
At the moment, no, I don't think so.
You can go to twitter.com/rangetouch in order to check out what we're up to over there. You can see a lot of Michael, you've been posting some Fallout, what I would call bonus content,
mm-hmm.
of just like things that are happening in your Fallout game, your Fallout playthrough, and yeah, we can do that. All right, so we'll see you on the next episode. Michael, you want to take us out?
Thanks for listening, children.